It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Shri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Shri and Peter. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. It's 2021, and we are in our Founders series. We're talking to people who've founded their businesses. It's a very exciting series. We hope you enjoy it. I'm Peter V.S. Bond. I'm your co-host. I'm also the Vice President of Retail Strategy at PowerReviews, a ratings and reviews software company. As always, I'm joined by my co-host. He is an e-commerce veteran of notable CPGs like, PepsiCo, J&J, Revlon, small little companies. Anyhow, he's an accomplished entrepreneur. He'll probably tell us a little about his latest venture. Please join me in welcoming the man known as Shri. Shri, how are you doing today?
Coming from the legend of loyalty himself. Thank you, sir. And it's a pleasure to do this week episode over episode with you, Peter, as always. When I'm not doing this, as you know, I've also helped launch Zenfuel, 100% natural supplements brand to help aid your sleep, energy, better movement, stress and anxiety relief, and male wellness. Do check it out at www.zenfuel.com or simply search Zenfuel, that's Z-E-N-F-U-E-L on Amazon. Zenfuel, where your happiness is our ambition.
And I can say as a Zen Fuel user of Zen Sono, my sleep has never been better. Seriously, I'm not just saying that because Shree's my partner. It actually has helped my sleeping tremendously. So give it a shot. I love their product.
Coming from the readings and reviews captain himself of CPG, I'm waiting to
five
see.
Stars,
live on the
five
website. Stars.
Let me remind our audience that you can find all of our content, our audio podcasts on 15 platforms. We have a YouTube channel that has playlists. We'll have one for our founder series. We have one for our profitability, our women's leadership series, and a number of others. All of that and so much more. It's all free. You can access it simply by visiting cpgguys.com. We also like to recommend other podcasts for you to listen to. We have our good friend, John Giorso at Orca Pacific. He manages a podcast called E-Commerce Deep Dive. Through conversations with industry leaders in retail and e-commerce, the podcast elucidates the complex e-commerce industry. Shree and I have both been guests on the podcast. We've also spoken at some of Orca Pacific's conferences. We recommend you give it a listen. We listen to it all the time. John is a fabulous person. He's been a guest on our podcast as well. It's called E-Commerce Deep Dive. Give it a shot. All right, now to the main event. Our guest today is the founder and CEO of Grocery Shopee. That's with two I's. Check the liner notes of the podcast. You'll be able to see details all there. It's a software platform that streamlines meal planning and grocery shopping process while helping retailers unlock lost revenue due to cart abandonment. I hate when that happens. I walk in the grocery store and there are all these just carts laying around in the middle of the aisle. Oh, wait a minute. We're talking about digital cart abandonment. Okay, I'm a little clueless here today. But in any event, she's a classically trained management consultant. She has technology-focused experience at both Bearing Point and Mercer. Shree, I think that means she can put together a four-box matrix in about 10 seconds flat.
Oh, boy.
I know. But as a working mother, she saw an opportunity in meeting the time-challenged shopping needs of consumers, and she decided to launch her current venture. We're looking forward to a very lively conversation. Please join us in welcoming to the podcast Katie Hotz. Katie, hello. How you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I'm great. Thank you.
Excellent. We're very excited about having you join us for the discussion. From my perspective, I spent 3 years working with the Campbell Soup Company while I was at IRI. And they're a food manufacturer of primary meal ingredients, and recipe capabilities were certainly a core component of their go-to-market strategy. I can tell you that trying to activate against that in a seamless manner was rather challenging. So I'm intrigued by what you have to talk about, because it's something I've been thinking about for the better part of 13 years now. So let's get right into the questions here. Shree and I'll interchange. Let's start off with me. Katie, why don't you share with our audience the background on the shopping experience friction that frustrated you as a shopper and led you to develop the Grocery Shopee solution? And how did you go about then validating that this frustration was more widespread than just you?
Really, the essence of how we came to be is my background is in digital marketing. To be more specific, it's in performance marketing. So it's the data side of marketing. And I was living in Chicago, two kids, husband who traveled full time. And it was just a constant pain point. Every time I got on that train in the morning, I knew I had nothing to do with dinner and how to pull dinner together in the evenings. The old days of meal planning before we had kids, I just didn't have time to do anymore. My husband didn't do it. And so it really was just a chronic pain point. And taking tired kids to a restaurant at 6:30 at night, was a nightmare. And so I started on the train drawing the pictures for what ultimately became our prototype. And it was interesting too, because when you're in Chicago, you have a lot of options. You know, we had digital grocery galore. And I just couldn't figure out how that was a solution, because I'd open up the screen and I'd start putting stuff in there. And then I just quit. Cause I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to make. You know, if I do taco night again, I'm just going to, you know, I'd rather just go out to eat. And that's really the essence of how the ball got rolling. What was interesting too is as we evolved, you know, the tech itself solves for a very specific problem, but the problem itself has actually evolved as well. You know, there's a lot more e-grocery today than there was when the tech was actually designed a couple of years ago and we started prototyping it. And now I find myself with two devices, because I'm actually meal planning on one, and then I'm manually inputting ingredients on the other. And then I know people can relate to this. you fill your groceries, and by the time I go to make the meal, I can't find the recipe that I used. This happened this weekend. I mean, this is raw. And so then you're scurrying, trying to figure out what recipe you use to get white chicken chili in your cart on Saturday morning. And that's been just an evolution of the number of problems that need to be solved for in the space. And so getting close to it has been our goal. How do we do that? We began with customer discovery. It is just the essence of the greatest thing an entrepreneur can do for themselves is allow someone to tell you that your baby is ugly. Go do the interviews. Go speak to people that are true customers, unbiased interviews. It was awkward. And there's a great Will Smith quote out there that, you know, the definition of success is how many awkward conversations you're willing to have. And man, we really knocked that one out of the park. But across the shoppers, it was so passionate that this problem really hadn't been solved. You kind of go, feels a little saturated. Really hasn't been solved? Hadn't been solved. And we took their data, and I'll talk more about that as we go through the interview, but there's a lot that we pulled from it. And then when we got behind the doors with grocers, we realized this was a problem that really was quite pervasive through the different stakeholders.
Katie, two things I want to call out. One, you quoted the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Awesome. And second of all, you mentioned using market research instead of just going on a hunch. So you right there, you've already won the hearts of Sri and me.
When I used to come home from my midday classes back in school at Virginia Tech, what will be running on the TV every single time is the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. So this episode's going to be a lot of fun. First of all, congratulations on the foresight to get into this space, aka grocery shopping, also digital grocery shopping, and welcome to the CPG guys. We're honored to have you as part of the Founders Month, in fact. So when I start thinking, you know, the problems that you were describing are problems I've experienced myself. You know, you're cooking, you want to cook a certain recipe, you just looked it up, there's ingredients, and no single retailer really makes it easy for you to find all those ingredients in one shot. You got to go put things in the cart one after the other. You forget something, you add something, it shows up, you miss something. There's substitutions. So I'm glad there's actually a technology in place now that I personally will embrace and start using as of this evening. So I'm looking forward to that. But speaking of technology and innovation, what are your thoughts on the current state of technology innovation in the grocery industry generally? And where is really the disruption happening in the, let's say, the customer or shopper journey in this case? Is it in store? Is it away from store? Is it more on the logistics last mile side? And has the pandemic really changed anything in any way? And is this going to stick?
Yeah, my perspective is going to be different than someone else's. I mean, the fulfillment pocket, super exciting, but we are very narrow. We fix a very niche pocket of user experience. And it was interesting because in the development of the tech, if we go back 18 months, everyone was just so hyper-focused on the last mile. Got to get those groceries to those moms as fast as possible. And you know, P.S., like, we're behind the doors with people, and it's a lot of men making these decisions for busy women. And that was a really interesting pocket to get into and realize that, you know, as we ran interviews, we weren't hearing that speed was a problem, not to get the groceries to the house. Speed was a problem.
Katie, I want to point something out since you mentioned it. You are definitely 100% correct. I personally have sat in rooms and boardrooms where we've used the word shopper mom, and it's usually 9 out of 10 are men. But thank you for calling that out. The industry does need a lot of diversity when it comes to women making choices for women.
I appreciate that. I was at one of the biggest grocers in North America, and they had one persona, and it was her. And it really, you kind of realize that there's some, I come from a segmentation background. I'm a marketer. And so, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity to start breaking that down. But yeah, so when we talk about the last mile, that's really what was interesting for us, because we're trying to get the attention of grocers, and everyone's going, oh, no, we're really focused on the last mile. We said, no, time out. We're performance marketers. We're focused on the first mile. There's a real, as people who come into this industry, we found this problem. Our data, which a lot of our data comes from McKinsey and Deloitte, 3 out of 4 shoppers were going online to buy the groceries and quitting. What, did they come back? Some do, some don't. You know, there's a whole wave of technology that didn't hit grocery. And what did it hit? It hit your Fast Fresh. It hit all the other options to get food. You know, all of a sudden you see this, you know, vertical integration with a lot of your last milers. You know, they can get other items to your house really quickly. But grocers are still struggling getting those groceries to your home. And it's that digital first angle that a lot of other places have embraced, other industry pockets have embraced, and grocery just hasn't. And there's reasons behind that that, you know, I'd argue don't matter. What the pandemic did is it created the people who realized that they needed to have, that they had a problem they needed to solve for, were the people around the boardroom table. Those are the people that privately would tell me, hey, Katie, listen, I've never actually checked out on our online platform. I've heard that more times than you could possibly even get your arms around. And but when there's a pandemic and you're afraid to go to the grocery, you're going to figure it out. And when you figure it out, you might not like that front end experience. And that's where we actually had a wonderful opportunity to take calls and get in with conversations that we've been trying to get for quite a while, because people realized that the front end wasn't great. You know, it's either Times Square, a lot of ads being pushed at you. You know, I don't have babies. I don't need to see baby ads. I don't have pets. I don't need to see pet ads. I don't drink, you know, Red Bull. I don't need to see that ad. There were a lot of things that just were wildly not personalized and not good in that journey. But where we really saw the greatest opportunity was using recipes as a recommendation engine. This to me is the mothership. Figuring out how to go Amazon-like, and you're looking at Amazon and how they capitalize, they make 369% lift when a shopper engages with their suggestions, those recommendations that they feed you on Amazon. That's magic. And that is leveling those capabilities and pulling them through into another platform. You know, this is the beauty of tech. It's playground. And we are a pure tech company. And so the ability to actually start to emulate that and start to design some of those tweaks in the system, I think that's really, that's the next frontier.
I know we asked you over to talk grocery and digital shopping and Shopify, but listening to you speak, you're always welcome back to come here and chat with us about customer journeys and how shaping customer journeys, the input needs to be significantly more diverse, and one customer journey does not represent her whatsoever.
Yeah, I love you talking about segmentation and understanding that the trip mission and the customer segment can be radically different from time to time, and it always is. And if you don't understand what motivates those segments, and ideally, you talked a lot about you're not interested in advertisement for babies. Well, that's the old way of demographics. She's a woman between this age and that age, so she's probably of childbearing years, so we're going to send her an ad about diapers. We have so much data now that gets us much better recommendations. And good on you for understanding that personalization can be a much more efficient mechanism using all the data that we have.
What's really powerful, just sort of to kind of cap that statement, is, you know, the grocers need to be competitive. They need to be empowered to compete. And I really think when you look at the data, when you align the data with innovative technology, that's that magic moment when you can empower your neighborhood grocer to be competitive.
Brilliant. And particularly when you can do so in a way that isn't necessarily price-based. Personalization started off as, let's just give offers, right? Let me figure out what they buy and incentivize them to just buy more of that. Really great, but you're giving away margin that you don't necessarily have to. I think what I like about your solution is you put together a recipe, it solves a problem, but it does so without necessarily incentivizing each and every component of that. But let's get to your launch and the work that you did prior to launch. It's our understanding you leveraged an incubator to do this. Would love to know how you went about selecting one and what were some of the great capabilities that came out of using one.
Sure. You know, we only did one, and it was customer discovery focused. And, you know, again, my graduate degree is in data analytics. I am hyper-focused on the need for real data and not guessing. And so it fit me to a T, and that's why I selected it. But it was just a couple months, and it allowed us to roll up our sleeves and conduct the discovery with our bare hands. And that's what you do. When you come out of the gates, that's how I'm surrounded by founders. When I look at the ones who I'm really impressed by, they do call that original data, that prototype was built with raw data that they called with their bare hands. And that is exactly what we did. And we really started with the shopper in mind and tried to kind of understand, you're kind of looking for just alignment in the data sets. You know, like we realized that the needs of a working mother is actually, and the needs of a stay-at-home mom, you know, that data is just totally agnostic, right? The moment you have a child in your home, you're busy. You need solutions that are aligned with speed. And so customer discovery was really wild for us. It also allowed us to sort of look into the ways that like the original design of our business model wasn't going to work. And there's a lot of red water, you know, there's a lot of people out there trying to take recipes and monetize them. And it's really the beauty of what we do is we don't own the recipes. There's recipes free on the internet. You know, there's really a new view and a new focus of how the industry as a whole should treat recipes, the application of recipes to sell more product, and that digital experience to just hyper meet that shopper's need and meet the shopper in the micro moment.
So just again, listening to you speak, right? Recipes, nothing new, has been around for a while. And if I think back to 5-6 years ago when the Blue Aprons of the world started showing up, heavily using recipes and ingredients and things of that nature, I've always felt as e-commerce started to evolve and retailing started getting more digitally penetrated, one of the areas for food and beverage giants to start looking at is actually being part of this, these sort of platforms and recipes, et cetera, so that when a item is when she is looking at a recipe or he's looking at a recipe, they can just have one simple click and put everything to cart and get all the products together. So I'd love to know how you are different than others in this space. Where is the opportunity that you have kind of anchored on for disruption? And how do you source recipe content? Part of this, if she's looking for, let's say, natural and organic, I'll make something up, like spinach as the anchor of a recipe, or tomato sauce. How do you source this?
So we'll back up for just a little bit and talk about how we're different. So when it comes to the way that we operate, we embrace the one single shopping experience that happens on the grocer's website. When you need groceries, you go one place, go to your grocer's website. And so that's why, like when we looked at shoppable technology, it just makes you scratch your head. Why are recipes shoppable on stagnant web pages associated with, you know, whatever, if it's food bloggers, if it's food brands, you know, so it's shoppable. Like, what does that do for you? We really see a need to be inside the shopping journey. So that's A. And so the way that we built the tech, we're actually a B2B company. So we work directly with the grocer if they're vertically integrated, or we work with their e-commerce platform if that's who they use instead. And we have partnerships with e-commerce platforms that'll be announced here soon. And in that opportunity, it allows us to really be able to serve many grocers so we can serve our brands better. We do have the opportunity to really get closer to what we call the golden tipping point. So when we look at busy parents and professionals with at least one child in the home, we call that the golden tipping point. And that group is really what defines what we do. And I think, you know, when you look at what's out there today, it's B2C. And it is, from a digital marketing perspective, it's fishing in the ocean, just looking for traffic to catch, right? Whether it's a mobile app or if it's a website. What we do is we actually capture that traffic when they come to their grocer's website. And it allows us to partner with the grocer. It allows us to meet the shopper in the most ideal moment. And for the shopper, it allows them to come in absolutely cold, do no meal planning whatsoever, and get their meal planning done and the grocery shopping done in 5 minutes or less. So that's really ultimately how we're different. When it comes to the recipes, we actually work with food brands and influencers to source the recipes. There's a little bit of secret sauce there that we keep behind the curtain, but it allows us to really bake into the tech what I consider to be the essence of content marketing. When you look at meal kits got people really excited. That's why they blew up, right? Tired people, like meal fatigue, which, I mean, welcome to a pandemic, right? We can all relate. They were looking for something new every week. And I joined one of them twice. And it was thrilling to see what new recipes were going to come up week after week. The problem is they're shipping stuff all over the country. It was a subscription I had to manage. It's really expensive. So I was spending, you know, for family four, honestly, I could take my kids down the street and get them pizza for cheaper than that. And I don't have to wash the dishes. And so it really wasn't solving the convenience problem. And so where I think that we really have this tremendous opportunity is to be able to allow local neighborhood grocers to leverage technology to emulate the meal kit. But that fulfillment happens when you pull up and pop your trunk, or they deliver it straight to your front door.
I'm in love with the model.
You're just a romantic at heart, Sri.
I just love this model. This has been back from my Frito days. This has always been an imaginary vision that someday we'll get here.
And apparently we are. So, Katie, there are a number of other third-party recipe-to-basket software solutions. Mm-hmm. Some are big national brands that people go to search recipes on. Other ones are maybe white labels some retailers have created on their own. I'm not going to name everybody. But what do you think really helps your solution stand apart, both from why retailers want to use you and why consumers want to embrace this as a mechanism?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, first and foremost, so we hear from grocers every week who have recipes on their site. And some of them own them, created them, very proud of that. Some of them license them. And there's one question that we ask to just change the conversation. And it's, are you selling more product with those recipes? And it's consistently a no. As a performance marketer, I get into the details of that. I say, you know, it's pretty anemic click rate, right? And yeah, and everyone kind of nods their head. And it's because of that single shopping journey. And when they're not in the shopping journey, they miss the moment, right? And so capitalizing on, it's not good enough just to get in the cart. You need to get to checkout. And this is it's an interesting thing to think about, because this isn't just about the grocer getting the checkout. This isn't just about the product getting in the cart and making the sale. This is ultimately about your shoppers. Your shoppers are frustrated. When they don't check out, there's a problem that we got to get to the bottom of. And so I can tell you that, you know, as a pure tech company, we treat that whole experience differently. We build our tech from the ground up with data that it took us almost 5 months to capture. And every feature, every toggle, every assumption was tested. Speed is critically important. People aren't dialing into this enough. You know, all these layers, when you look at competitors out there, they need you to have a new account. You got to set up that account. What's your account password? What's the email address associated with that account? You know, oh, now we're going to bump everything over to one of a couple grocers that have an open API, and, you know, they're willing to let you fill your cart there. So now, what email did you use for that grocer account? What's your password for that grocer account? And now once they bump you, they've let you already fill your cart and all your options. Some of that stuff's not available at that store. It's reverse engineering, and it's a problem that honestly, you can come in with surgical gloves and try to fix it, but we just started at zero. We built from the ground up. We built a brand new business model, brand new revenue model. Everything about what we do serves that grocer. It gives that grocer bigger baskets, builds that loyalty. We have a recipe box built within our tech. And so when you visit that grocer site, you're already known to us. That's how we integrate. There's no extra clicks. There's nothing fancy, no passwords. And you have a recipe box. When you like something, we feed everything that you order directly into that recipe box, and you can save it. Come back over and over again. It literally would take you 3 clicks to check out. And that is just the ultimate convenience that we can deliver. And on top of that, we just remove all that just dead weight that's created in the experiences today when they're trying to fix. Like, if you own your recipes and you're really stuck on monetizing them, God bless you. Because it's just a long, hard road. I tell you too, that when it comes to serving that shopper first, that's where we started. And we started really wide. And we then grabbed the people who told us that online grocery shopping was great. I love online grocery shopping. So convenient. Very few people, by the way. And this was 18 months ago, and pulled them into focus groups, and we spent hours with them. And what we found out was exactly what their magic was. If they did their meal planning first, they thought online grocery shopping was a breeze. And so that's really how we backed into the essence of what we do. And then a lot of the rest of it came from the data we collected through prototypes.
Sounds like your platform is making it a lot easier. Particularly, I love the no having to log in with separate passwords. By the way, Sri, did you remember to change your universal password from password so that WikiLeaks doesn't tap in and steal your emails again?
You almost gave it away. There's a 1, 2, 3 at the end.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
So, Katie, I don't think we can debate that, you know, she cooks meals, not ingredients. And if you guys have really gone into the world of reverse engineering, how that shopping experience takes place, thought about integrating passwords into one experience for her, as well as with a single click, if you're able to create a whole recipe into a cart. This is a big deal. In 50 plus episodes, the CPG guys have never asked to see a demo. I'm going to actually ask to see a demo after this one. How about that, Peter? When I think about the shopper who's increasingly these days expecting the experience to be tailored very individualistic to her needs, which is very fair, by the way, leveraging, you know, behavioral data and shopper attitudes, that's what they want to see. So how do you reflect that in the platform and cater to her versus them?
So really, when you look at the element of personalizing the tech and meeting the shopper's needs, you really have to back up and talk about what shoppers we're talking about. Again, this is the segmentation theme. The Gen Z, your millennial, and your Gen X, which is what I am, we represent the greatest economic opportunity for grocers. And so they need to be looking down at the younger generations and catering to them. So that starts with really embracing that they look at fresh content every time they go online. They live with their mobile phone in their hand and they never see the same recipe twice, right? Why? Because fresh recipe content is released every second on the internet, right? And you can't compete with that. Grocers can't compete. Brands can't compete with that. And so, but if you're going to empower grocers to win this battle, that's the problem to solve. And so the very first experience that we have a creative director, culinary director, nutritionist.
For the benefit of our listeners, could you just articulate that problem to solve in a simple statement?
Yes, you need to be targeting the younger generations. You need to understand what they're...
I wonder what they look at, what they say when they look at you and me, Peter.
I am 1 year away from being a boomer. I just made it into Gen X, or I'm still lucky kind you. Of cool. Not so lucky cool, you. But
lucky you. But go on, Kitty.
You're totally still cool. Yes. So Pinterest-like experiences are critical. And if you're not delivering fresh content with every visit, you're failing. And that's really where I feel like we bring the greatest value to grocers. Behind that experience, for those shoppers who want more control, we developed our toggles based upon the data. We know that cook time is actually the number one decision-making factor in a busy parent or professional deciding what they're going to make Monday through Friday. And our goal is to serve grocers and help them earn back dinner those 5 days a week. And so when you connect those two pieces, that's exactly how we designed the second page of the experience. You can come in. We believe in explicit data capture. I know that AI, machine learning, predictive, I mean, it's all out there. We have machine learning in our tech. There's plenty that you can leverage to follow trend data, right? And start predicting future outcomes. But that trend data doesn't know that your vegan mother-in-law just showed up for the weekend. That trend data doesn't know that my meat-eating husband, who's the only meat-eater in the house, is on a 2-week business trip, right? And so what you're managing is you're constantly managing your own AI tracking tools. And that's really where we believe explicit data capture is critically important to personalization. And it also allows for a lot of data capture on preference that moves us into a much more refined personalization within the platform. And those are the iterations that we're working through now and testing with private groups.
I had a curiosity question. Is your mother-in-law vegan?
She's vegan.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, when you see my demo, you'll know. Yeah, we have videos released. But you know, it's really important. It's important. My daughter's vegetarian. I mean, we've got all these different, my household's not that unique, you know? Dietary edits are so common. One in three households has a non-medically advised dietary edit. And not just grocers, doctor's offices, hospitals, there's a lot of people out there trying to get the message out on where they can get dietary edits.
You are so correct. In my own household, I'm vegetarian. My older daughter is vegan. My younger daughter, the plate doesn't qualify unless it had something cooked that once took a breath. And my wife will eat whatever the other three anchor on. So it is a hodgepodge mess if you thought about it.
Katie, you mentioned you're a B2B business. So when I look at the grocery industry, there are big national retailers, there's super regionals, there are regionals, there's Bishop's Orchard, which is a lovely little one-store chain in Guilford, Connecticut, where I love to shop. So how much of this spectrum is your target? Who are you really looking to adopt this solution?
You know, the regional grocers are just a great fit for us. And that definition to me is really wide.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. First of all, we're a young company and we know our sweet spot and we're sticking with our sweet spot. Those grocers, when they are a regional grocer, they know their customer. And when you know your customer, our partnership's going to just be awesome. Because that's when they know their customers' preferences, we can get so much closer to converting those customers into Shopee customers, getting them into the Shopee experience. You know, our experience is totally white label. It allows them to come into the platform and it looks and feels exactly like the grocer's brand, you know, imagery, fonts, colors. And that's critically important to be a part of the single shopping journey. And so the regional grocers, they are all about their brand. They're all about their shopper. They know that shopper. And that's really what we've leaned into.
You know, behind every successful grocery shopping platform and ecosystem is a woman and a team. No race was ever run alone. Who are your partners and how are your partners helping you continue to deliver this amazing experience for her?
I'll tell you, the best partners we have right now are really the stakeholders that we serve today. I would tell you that one of the most important partners in our journey is the brands. Those brands have hundreds or thousands of professionally curated recipes. And being able to diversify selection for the shopper is rooted in, we obviously work with influencers as well, but it's also rooted in working with the brands. We're actively working with them now. In terms of our greater growth, you know, we've actually, as a tech company, we found big warm hugs with the e-commerce platforms. They've got a house of engineers. We've got a house of engineers. It's just, we can move quickly. We can iterate. We can prototype. You know, this is the game. You know, when you're a grocer, you're left with this buy versus build question. And, you know, even if you can build it, you can't maintain it. If you can maintain it, you can't evolve it. We can do that for you. And so there's so much that we can do with our partners on the e-commerce side, and they love it. They get as excited as we do, which is pretty awesome. The grocers as well, there's a lot of vertically integrated grocers out there who have built their own platforms and they have a ton of capabilities. And so that's really the partnerships that we're focused most on today.
You know, as I think about this and I'm thinking aloud, one of the big problems that Food and Bev CPG has traditionally had, this platform is technically going towards helping them out with, is they have a ton of recipes, as you mentioned, in-house, and I've seen so many of them in my own life, having touched many large multi-billion-dollar brands. And these recipes are not individualistic, as in the recipe has the ingredient. The only ingredient is the brand that the company features. They span multiple brands across multiple companies, but large brands rarely create partnerships with other brands for a whole ton of reasons, including liability, the shopper journeys may not match, as well as brand equity. And I think you are now creating a bridge to help solve that problem for brands in being clubbed together in a basket without actually impacting brand equity.
Katie, you mentioned having some partnerships and that's helping fuel some growth. Would love to hear a little bit more about what you consider to be some accelerators and priorities around growth, be it other capabilities, be it distribution. Where are you focusing your attention?
A couple things. So first of all, marketplace is hot right now. So we've definitely been prototyping with marketplace. Wellness, and really looking at, we look at wellness a little differently than what we exist today, but really thinking through from, again, like a doctor's, a hospital's perspective, of how can they help their patients be dairy-free, be gluten-free, be paleo, have healthier diets. That's a critical component, and it should be. If you're in this space, you should be thinking, this isn't just about Whole30 and paleo. This is about really helping people live healthier lifestyles, and they're hearing it from the doctor, and they don't know where to figure it out. We've lived that firsthand in my family, and so that's critical. The deeper personalization, I tell you, it's tech is a sandbox, and so just getting behind the curtain with the data, finding a really good partner. We're very blessed with the partners that we have and the data sharing that we're doing, and being able to just go behind the curtain and go and look for those correlations, look for those areas that we need to do a little bit of testing, and figure out just because the assumption is X doesn't mean the answer is X. And so we're working through a lot of that. And I would say the ultimate, one of the ultimate goals for us is that the recommendations, really improving recipes as a recommender to drive basket, that to me is one of the greatest powerhouses of delivering convenience, meeting the shopper in the micro moment, and being able to serve that grocer with a level of convenience that's going to bring that shopper back over and over again.
Well said, Katie. And as I think of this particular episode, as we discuss, you're part of Founders Month, which is January 2021, and most businesses and startups, entrepreneurship came via mentorship. Who was your mentor? And then what advice would you pass on as a mentor to those who have always been mulling about venturing into their own business and starting up a ecosystem or a company or a brand perhaps, or a tech platform like you have?
Yeah, great question. I love that you've done on that. So my mentor is actually a lady named Louise Pritchard, and she has been my mentor for 20 years. And when we spun up this idea, she came on as a co-founder and the chief marketing officer of the company. And she leads our marketing and sales efforts. And I'll tell you, the reason that I appreciate the question, I'll hit it from another angle. The need to have someone in your world who has a little bit more experience than you, and they can, A, believe in you, guide you. You have to surround yourself with people. I coffee with a young entrepreneur this morning, and she, you know, that was the core message we left with, is you need to go find some people. Go find there's tons of entrepreneurship groups, counseling groups that'll give you access to legal, accounting, you know, business revenue modeling, accelerators, incubators, things like that. Most towns have them now. And when I find entrepreneurs who are trying to do it alone, it's a lonely road. Trying to get a company off the ground, it's hard. Every decision rolls right back to you. You have to have someone in your court who believes in you, believes in your hypothesis. They actually think that you're onto something. And then you've got to be able to lean on that person. And I certainly did with Louise. Maybe it's not often that you bring your mentor on to be your business partner, but it was an awesome decision. I'd do it all over again.
Did you know of her from William and Mary or in another way?
I cold called Louise when I was 20 years old, and I was graduating college early, and I needed a job. And she was an executive with Fortune magazine at the time. And she helped me get my first job in Atlanta. And I have turned to her at every moment throughout. I was in consulting for 20 years. She's always been there to guide me. And I sat down on a park bench with her one day and told her I wanted to be, I wanted to build a tech company with this idea I had, and the rest was history.
I've mentioned this on a prior podcast, but I have many mentors in my life, one of whom mentioned to me a couple of years ago and framed it this way: who's on your board of directors? And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you have to think of yourself as a business, and you have to surround yourself with great advisors who are going to help you grow it. So think about who that is. And while I don't think you need to fly them in for board meetings all the time, having regularly scheduled calls and letting them know that you value their opinion will yield many benefits for you. And I can attest to that in my life. So good on you. Amen. To our listeners, I want to remind you that all of our content, links to our audio podcast on any of the platforms that you enjoy. We have a YouTube channel, as I mentioned earlier. Our good friend Adam Rose has created an e-commerce glossary. And we have a list of all the podcasts we like to listen to when we don't listen to ourselves. You can find that on cpgguys.com. And if you have a virtual assistant, you're walking around the house, you want to do a little entertainment, a little education at the same time, just ask it to play the CPG Guys. It'll actually work. I won't mention her name because she'll set off the one behind me and probably all the ones for people who are listening on speaker right now. So in any event, Katie, thank you for joining us. This has been very insightful. Could you please tell listeners how they can learn more about grocery shopping?
Yes, thank you. Groceryshoppy.com. That's groceryshoppii.com. They can get tons of information there. We also have a LinkedIn page that stays very updated, and they can find me on LinkedIn.
We'll put all three of those links in the liner notes of this podcast episode so people can find them. That's terrific, and thank you for joining us. Sri, wow, this was a great one. We're going to hit up Katie for a demo after we get off this podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing this, but more great omnichannel grocery shopping solutions that improve the customer experience, right?
And Peter, I get a pat on the back for behaving because she started the conversation saying, I'm a performance marketer and I didn't ask her any questions about the funnel.
No funnel questions. Yeah, actually, no funnel questions. I'm shocked a little. Anyhow, to our audience, don't forget to leave us feedback. We really appreciate it. It helped guide our curriculum, so to speak, in 2020. Go to tinyurl.com/AppleCPGpodcast. Scroll down, give it a star rating. We like that, preferably if it's the fifth star. You don't have to, but we like it. But particularly write a review and leave
five stars look pretty to the beholder regardless.
I know. But we really want the review because we want the feedback. It helped us decide that we needed to do a profitability series. It helped us decide to do the Q&A videos that we put on Instagram. By the way, check us out on Instagram too, just CPG guys. We got a lot of stuff there. But in any event, we thank you everybody for listening and we look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.